But and usually in this case, the underdogs that we remember are those that are victorious. And of course, one of the first Bible stories that you learn as a child is the story of David and Goliath. Truly, of all the people in the Bible, he truly was probably the number one underdog. And I tell you what, he dared to be victorious. Now turn to 1 Samuel 17. Here you have the story. Now a lot of this, of course, is familiar, but we're going to talk about how it helps us. How does this story help us today? And maybe a few other things that will help us in our helping the children. You know, here you have, I want you to get a picture, just like this morning we talked about looking up to the cross. You get a picture of what it was like. I want you to get a picture about the battle. Most people don't have a picture of what it was like. And you can go and you can even see slides that show you kind of what this area looked like. In chapter 17 now, and in verse 1, starting in verse 2. Now Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they pitched by the valley of Elah. And they set in battle an array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on the one side. The Israelites stood on the mountain on the other side. And there was a valley between them. So get this. There's a mountain over here with the children of Israel. And a mountain over here with the Philistines. And a valley. And they're both coming down the valley. And they're going to fight in the valley. And one side had Saul, who was the tallest, on his side. Remember, that's a king. He's tall. He's on this side. And you have the Philistines on this side, and they got a taller guy, Goliath. And it's going to be face-to-face combat. And, of course, back then, people had swords. They had long swords and short swords. You can sometimes go to, some of the, we had Don Patton, who's a real interesting individual. And he's an archaeologist, and he's this July, he's going to the Ark. You might have heard a little bit about him. He has a piece of the Ark. He's been there 6 times. And I asked him, where is he? He said, it's in my freezer. It's just a little piece about this big. And he's going there in July with the help of one of the governments there. And I just tell you this. You might think it's strange, but he just held us a meeting and showed us the slides and everything. And he's going to the Ark in July. And a piece of the Ark is sticking out of the ice at 10,000 feet in Mount Ararat. They were going to the other side, and that's the problem they had. And now one of the governments, he's met with the head of the government. He asked Don Patton, he said, why do you go? He said, we've been watching you for 15, 20 years. Why do you keep going to that side? Why don't you go to the other side? He said, because it's sticking out on the other side. He said, it's sticking out? He said, yes, let me show you. And he went to his computer. The commander of this the country, I'm not sure if it was Iraq or Turkey, he looked on the computer. He said, and there was the picture. Don got ready to take a picture with his phone. He said, you can't take a picture. So Don said this, and then Don said, now I'm going to show you a slide of a drawing of the drawing what I saw. And he shows us the drawing that Don drew a few minutes after. It's a boat. It's a wooden, more of a wooden shape kind of a boat. It's not like a boat like this. It's wooden, sticking out of the ice. And he's going there in July. And so we'll see what happens. He's probably the number one expert on the Ark. And again, if it's there, it's great. If it's not there, it doesn't change the story. But Don Patton is a very interesting individual. And so we'll pray for John. I don't know how I got into that, but every time I talk about I saw what he drew. It's just unbelievable. But Don's going to be there, and we'll remember him. But he also brought some swords, and he brought some things that the people used back in those days. He brought a battery from the first century that still works, a battery. You fill it with wine, grape juice kind of thing. And for those that are doctors, he brought a left-handed and a right-handed circumcision knife. That's all I'm saying. But he had all these artifacts, but he had some swords. And some of the swords are very interesting. Just like some swords had on the top, had the ridges going this way, and it had a sword. The bottom of the sword, the ridges went the other way. What do you think that was for? Two-edged sword, in and out. You know? And so here you have these people, long swords, short swords. And the victors, even those who win, what's going to happen to them? They're going to lose hundreds or thousands of men. So why not save a lot of lives? Save a lot of soldiers? Save a lot of women from being widows and children from being fatherless? Why don't we just say, hey, you pick a guy on your side of the hill. We'll pick a guy, have him go down in the valley. We'll have a big fight. Whoever wins, then you've got to serve us. And so that's what happens in verse 8. He stood and cried out, the armies of Israel, and said unto them, why are you come out to set your battle to array? Am I not a Philistine, and ye servants of Saul? Choose you a man for you. Let him come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we'll be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall be our servants and serve us. Well, that's a good challenge. That'd save a lot of wars. Only thing, from then on, when you have to elect a president, you'd probably have to elect, back in the old days, we'd probably have to elect Arnold. We'd have to collect some big old strong guy. I wouldn't want no weak guy going to fight somebody. But that's how. It's an interesting way how they introduce it here. Now, we meet Goliath. Look in chapter, same chapter, verse 4. And there went out a champion out of the camp of Philistines, a man named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a helmet of brass upon his head. He was armed with a coat of mail. The weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. He had greaves of brass upon his legs, a target of brass between his shoulders. The staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him. He's referred to as a champion. That word is only used 5 times in the Old Testament. 3 times it's used in this chapter referring to Goliath. It means a champion is one who stands in the middle and represents the whole army. Now, his size, it's not totally known how you figured out, but it's close. He was over 9 feet tall, and he weighed over 500 pounds. Now, Shaquille O'Neal is about 7'1" and about 300 pounds. And if you've ever seen him on TV or ever seen him when he talks to somebody, he's a giant. Goliath was 2 feet taller, probably 200 more pounds. His spearhead weighed 15 pounds. His armor, 120 pounds. This was a huge, massive, unbelievably strong man. And on top of that, he's a good soldier. He's a good soldier. He's not just some guy to put armor on. He's a good soldier. He's a good fighter. And he's also a trash talker. Look in verse 44. He's a trash talker. The Philistine said to David, come to me. I'll give your flesh with the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. He's a trash talker. And then we're introduced to David. And in verse 12 of 17. Now David was the son of the Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse. And we talked about this morning. He had 8 sons, and the man went among from an old man in the days of Saul. Verse 17, Jesse said unto David his son, take now thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp and your brethren. And in verse 23, he talked with them, and behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines. And he spoke according to the same words, and David heard him. David was really, he was young, but he couldn't even pass for a soldier. He couldn't pass for someone later on in his late teens and try to sneak into the army like a lot of people did and have even in the United States Army. He wasn't even big enough. Maybe he wasn't even shaven. Probably no taller than 5'6". The average height of an Israelite, they say, was 5'6". So maybe his teenage years, he might grow a couple more inches, so he's probably 5'3", 5'4", 5'5". Notice, before they met face to face, there was a period of 40 days. In verse 16 in the story, and the Philistines drew near morning and evening, and he presented himself for 40 days. That's 40 days before they really meet face to face after we have this challenge. And again, 40 is interesting. 40 days, you have 40. 40 is used in the wanderings, Jesus being tempted, and you have the reigning 40 days. So numbers in the Bible are real unique. Now, do you think David wondered, look at the size of that guy? Have you ever thought of that? Look, that's what we would all do. One time I got off an airplane. He was here in Charlotte. And there's a guy that was on the plane with me. He was one of the Globetrotters. He was 7'7". And he was huge. I mean, his waist came up to about here. And he was there. He was in front of me, and we were talking about some things, and we had to change planes, and we were doing something. But it happened in Charlotte. And all of a sudden, a charter plane from Japan landed. And they had to come down there running down the halls trying to get to another plane. And I promise, and this isn't everyone had just stopped and went, oh! And they all were taking pictures of him. He didn't know. They were getting behind him like this. And he had his back to him. He didn't know. They just stood and were going, oh. Some ran back and went, oh. And I think, oh, that's not just it, but I just remember it was a charter plane. And they were saying, come on, they're waiting for us down here. We got it. They're going to some other place. And they had to get a new plane. But they all were taking pictures, just like we would. Oh, look at this. What about David? Don't you think? He just looked and said, look at the size of this guy. I wonder what he said. What in the world? Whoa. Let me think for a minute now, you know. But it's interesting what he says. In fact, look what he says in verse 26. David spoke to the men that stood by, saying, what shall be done to this man that kills a Philistine? Takes away the reproach from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? He didn't say, look at that. That's the biggest guy I've ever seen. He said, who in the world does this guy think he is? I don't care if he's 9 feet tall and weighs 500 pounds. You mean he's going to talk to our God like that? Now, the older guys are probably going, hey, have you seen how tall he is? I ain't getting too upset with him, you know. And words aren't going to hurt me, but his spirit looks like it would hurt me. David's more concerned, who is this guy? And again, look what he says in verse 32. In verse 32, David says, Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. You guys are chicken? Your heart's all, oh, what are we going to do? He said, don't worry, your servant, he's going to go and fight the Philistine. I wonder what the rest of the Israelites thought. How could he do it? Because he trusted. He knew that his strength was going to come from God. He had courage. Courage doesn't mean you're not afraid. Courage doesn't mean you're not afraid. It means you walk across the face of fear. Fear's still there. I remember when my daddy was, when I was growing up and down in our basement in Canada, we had a coal furnace. And if it got really, really hot, you know, and in wintertime, sometimes it did, we had this little door that kind of opened and closed on the furnace. And if it got real hot, it would blow it off. So in the middle of the night, sometimes when it would be below zero and it got real hot in there, it was a big cement thing piece. It blew off and it hit the wall. And I remember one night it hit, I thought every monster in the world was downstairs. You know what I mean? Everyone's down there. And I remember my dad got up and went downstairs. And I just was little and I said, man, how could he do that? He's not afraid of anything, my daddy. Well, you know, he's half asleep. But he knew exactly what it was. And he went down and put it by. I said, man, that guy's tough. And then as I got a little older, I said, what am I going to do if it was my house? And that blew off and every monster's down there. Am I going to go down there? So I remember as you get older, when you have your children and all of a sudden it'll be nighttime and, hey, something happens outside your door. The wind's blowing. And the kids don't know it's the wind. And you're not for sure. And it's hitting hard. And you know there's no boogermans, but there could be. You know there's no Sasquatch, but it might be at my house. You don't know for sure. But you're 30 years old and now, and you ain't got a lot of experience. And now, so they say, Daddy, go down and make sure there's no men. I'm going. Don't rush me. And so you start going. Are you a little afraid? Yeah. Yes, you are. But you know why you do it? Because you got someone you got to help. And if there is a crazy guy out there, he's going to have to get through you to get to your kids and your wife. And so are you afraid? Sure you are. But you got that's what you do. That's what daddies do. And mummies sometimes, they live by themselves, and they're single mamas. They got to do the same thing. And how could David do it? I tell you what, was he a little? I'm sure he was. When he had to fight the lion and the bear, do you think he fought and got no scratches? That would, if there's no scratches, God would just look at him or just, you know, push him down. But he probably had some scratches, and I'm sure David's a little afraid. But his question is a question for all of us. He said, who in the world is this guy? Who does he think he is? He's saying that about my God? And today, you mean he's saying there's no God? We got to talk about this. Sometimes in schools, you'll have the odd teacher. That'll say something that's not right, and your kids will come home, and you'll say, is that what your teacher said? And so you might have to confront him in a nice way. You say, maybe my daughter or son didn't understand. Did you say that there's no God? Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. That's not what I teach my children. And I think there is a God. And if you're going to tell them there's no God, I'm going to have to tell them you're a liar. And I hate to say that about you, but that's not the truth. You got to stand up sometimes. And it may be at work or someone's using bad language. Say, hey, please don't say that about my God. Please don't use my God's name in that way. You got to stand. Who in the world is this? Someone speaks against your brethren. Hell, that person's not. They're not very nice. Hey, I know them. They're good. That doesn't mean they didn't mess up sometime, but they're good people. And today, who is this person that teaches against God's word? Who is this person that teaches another gospel? Who is this person that says you become a Christian different than what the Bible says? Who is this? I need to talk to them. I'm not afraid of them. And David, he did. He stood up. Now, how he fought was really interesting. How he fought. Look at the time of the battle now. Now it's time for the battle. Just imagine, it was a boxing match. Just think if this was a nowadays boxing match. This is what it would look like. This is what it would sound like. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the heavyweight championship of the world. In the red corner, standing 9'6", weighing 500 pounds, with a record of 850 and no losses. He's killed every opponent. The champion, Goliath. In the blue corner, standing 5'6", 115 pounds, soaking wet. He says he's 13, but he looks like he's 10. He's never had a fight before. That's why he's alive, I believe. Let's hear it for little David over here. That's what it would sound like. That's what it would sound like. Ultimate underdog. Now let's look closer at the underdog. Remember what we said in 1 Samuel 13:14? Here was an underdog, and he was chosen king because he was a man after God's own heart. And again, the way I look at that is I talk about he wanted God's affection. Just like you want your dating, you want your mate to be, you want their heart. You want them to think about you all the time. You want them to think that you're the greatest. He wanted God to think, this is a servant. This is somebody that I want to have with me. And if he understood the idea of for eternity, he wanted to please God first and foremost. He wanted the same heart that God did. He wanted to be just like that. He wanted to love the things God loved and hate the things God hated. And David did something that the rest of the Israelites didn't have. Or Goliath or the Philistines didn't have. And that was a heart set on serving God. It doesn't mean the Israelites didn't like serving God. And sometimes they did. But if it got tough, I don't know. And today, we ask, is your heart right? It's easy to have a heart right when things are going well. It sure is. But what's it like when things aren't going so well? When you lose your job. When your mate leaves you. When you get sick. You get physically sick. You lose a loved one. You're told you only have a few days. Tragedy happens. Then what's your heart like? What's your heart like? And that's what the Lord's looking for people. Here was a terrible challenge. I mean, in the physical way, for a young boy to stand up, all the other guys wouldn't, but David did. His heart was right. And that's the challenge we have. We've got to get our heart right. And when your heart's right, you can be victorious over the poison of sin. You can. There's no drug worth losing your soul for. And okay, drugs are terrible. And so you got to teach people about them, and you got to try to help them, and so forth. Or never start, but then you teach them. No drug's worth that. That's a challenge. That's a giant. Pornography's another one. That's hard for people. They watch it. It gets in your mind and in your heart and just gets in your system. You got to fight against a challenge, but you can. And there's no male or female that you meet. There's nobody that's worth losing your soul over to commit adultery or fornication. There's no one like that. And you got to get that in your mind. And David's heart was right. No matter what was coming, he's going to try. Now, David's going to fall short coming up. He's going to give in. You got to guard your heart. And as strong as you are, remember, take heed lest you what? Fall. David didn't take heed. David knows God and how he works. Look at 33. Verse 33. We've read this morning. Look what he knows. Saul said to David, "You're not able to go against this Philistine and fight him. You're not but a youth and a man of war from his youth." And David said to Saul, "Thy servant kept his father's sheep. There came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. I went after him, and I smote him, and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard, smote him, and I slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defiled the armies of the living God." His personal experience taught him, this guy is nothing. Think, would you rather fight a giant or a lion? I'm going for the giant. He's going to be slow. I'm going to get in and out. The bear and the lion, they're faster than you. They're stronger than you. And I don't want to mess with them. I don't want to mess with them. But David had his personal experience. And that's one of the best things we can have in our life to teach us. That's what wisdom comes from, application of knowledge. And the more knowledge you get, and as years go on, I appreciate so much our older brothers and sisters who just take every one day at a time. And they try not to get things bothering them too much. We know, as David did, that past victories are here because they're gone. We've been sick and gotten better. Raise your hand if you got sick and you prayed and you believe God helped you. I do. How about, have you been sad for whatever it might be? And you didn't know if the sun would ever come up again in your heart. And now it's up. Raise your hand. I've had double, so I'm doing it. Have you had marriage woes? And you didn't know if your marriage would ever get back together again. And maybe your marriage woes was your mate left. And is not coming back. Left someone else. Left you maybe alone or with the children. And you'd never find happiness again. But you found it. Raise your hand. That's me. My little baby over there. That's me. And sometimes I used to sit on my bed by myself, by myself, and I'd say. And the church I was at, that I was preaching at that time, they didn't want me to preach anymore. Said, "Your wife left you, and we don't want you to speak for us anymore." And I remember sitting and saying, "I wonder if anybody will ever want me to preach again." I said, my wife, we did everything we could to try to get my wife to live right and straighten up, but she didn't. And she just decided to run off and leave us and stuff. And so, I think, as the Bible teaches, that I had the right to put her away and to remarry, but that still didn't change. Some places didn't want me to preach anymore. They canceled my meeting. And I don't tell you this, be sad for me. But I thought that. I said, what am I going to do? I just like to preach. Maybe I'll start my own group. I don't know what I'll do, And I just prayed, "Lord, if you want me to preach, I sure want to preach. Maybe I shouldn't preach anymore. Maybe my example wouldn't be good. I'd like to preach someplace." I said, "But, I have kids that live here in Salt Lake City. I'd like to be close to Salt Lake City if I can." So where do you think I ended up? Now, on the map, it looks a long way. It was Reno, Nevada. It's an 8-hour drive through the desert on the interstate. Oh, you can fly. Delta's got a hub. You can fly about every other hour. There's a plane going. It was the closest. And I said this too in my prayers. Maybe I shouldn't have. I said, I'm telling you my prayers. I said, "Lord, I'd like to stay close. And if it could be, if it can be self-supporting, so I don't have to write other churches and explain all my life story and what happened. It would be a whole bunch. Now, during this time, a lot, Concord supported me. Concord was one of the ones who I forget what it was, Brother Lee or one of them, they said, Paul, we'll support you till you die, or we'll support you till you go off the edge, or something like that, you know. I forget what it was. Something like that, they said. In other words, don't be crazy and we'll help you. And if I didn't get called, I got called by the closest self-supporting church to Salt Lake City, which was 500 miles away. Now, how did I get that call? It wasn't no miracle. I would have got it right away. And it wasn't a miracle. I probably would have made more money. And it wasn't a miracle. But how did I end up in the closest place to where I was for 3 years? And then during that time, met Laura, and they're here. The story goes on. I'll tell you how. Because the Lord helps you. When your heart's right and you're trying to do right, you're the underdog. That's what David was. And all of us, when we're sick, we're downhearted, what are we going to do? The Lord will raise us up. So experiences. David had them. He wasn't afraid of this giant now. And then not only that, what helps us today are Bible stories like this. That's why we study. Romans says these things are written aforetime for our learning. You learn from Noah. You learn from Moses. You learn from David. And you learn from all the others over and over again. Now, how does David decide to fight against the giant? Look in verse 38 and 39. And Saul armed David with his armor, and he put a helmet of brass upon his head. He also armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his armor, and he said, go, for he had not proved it. David said to Saul, I can't go with thee, for I haven't proved them. And David put them off him. Here, what it was, is Saul puts on, he's a little guy, and he puts on, it's like a little guy putting on NFL football uniform. You know, he puts it on, his helmet, he can't see his shoulders, and he looks like this. And said, it'd be like looking, okay, I'm ready to fight. Every time he puts his head down, the helmet falls over. He can't fight. He can't wear all that stuff. And what we're going to learn is you've got to learn what your abilities are. How am I going to fight? How am I going to teach somebody? Some people won't listen, so you have to set a good example for them. Other people will listen, but you better have your facts together, and they'll listen to you. Others don't want to listen, and sometimes maybe one mate might and the other one won't. And so all those things, you've got to use what you're good at. So what does he choose? In verse 40, he takes his staff in his hand, and he chooses 5 smooth stones out of the brook, put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had even in the scrip. His sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. Now, you can't wear that. And the idea of the sling, now, it wasn't one of those kind of slings that we would have today. It'd be one where you put a rock in, and you go like this, and then you let it go. Now, and that was the way lots of people thought. Look in Judges 20:16. Again, this is the show. God just used many of the practices that were going on and helped them in a miraculous way. But look at 20:16. Talking about some fighters. Look what it says. Among all those in Judges 20:16, there were 700 chosen men left-handed. Everyone could sling stones at a hair's breadth and not miss. So it's not unusual for someone to fight with a sling. 700, they could let it go, and within a hair's, you know, they could knock hands off a fence every time. So David's going to, hey, here he is. He's going to pick his sling here with 5 stones. Hey, have you ever wondered, why did, I think I mentioned this many years ago, and I was here. Do you know, wonder why he picked 5 stones? Get 5, just in case the Lord's not a very good shot. You know, maybe David was told, get 5 stones. And David said, probably said to himself, why am I getting 5? I ain't got time but to throw one at this guy. If I miss one, he's going to be mad at me. What do you mean 5? I thought the Lord is going to be helping me. He better be, because I can't even hardly swing like that. 5. You ever wonder? Now, I don't know for sure. In fact, this might not even be. But I do know this. Do you know how many brothers Goliath had? So after you get Goliath, keep the other ones nearby. because they might be coming down off the hill, you know. Hey, you got my brother. I got four more left, you know. I don't know, but I heard an old preacher say that. And, you know, so I just throw that in for free. And if you don't like it, Scott Sandusky kind of likes it, so maybe he agrees. Yell at him after I leave. You got 51 weeks to yell at him. He chose a woman that, a weapon he's familiar with, something he could use. And today, I don't know what you have to, what's good for you. I don't know. For some people, you know, the best weapon you have is to get rid of your computer. That's your best weapon. That's how you'll beat. Don't have it. Well, I need it for work. Well, maybe then get someone else to help you. Or get rid of your telephone. Get rid of your job. If job is something that's causing you. Go to another town. If you're having maybe a local church, go to another congregation. That whatever it is, I don't know, but do something that you can do. That's, you're familiar and that'll help you. He knew where to hit him. He hit him right between the eyes. I'm not a medical doctor, but I just know that here, you know, around here, there's lots of bones and things, but right there in the middle, they say that's a pretty good place to hit a guy. And that's where he hit him. And now he meets him face to face. Probably about, you know, as they're coming, here he is, maybe 20, 15 feet apart. David meets him now face to face. A lot of people talk big game until they have to play. Yeah, I'm going to be good. Wait till I play. They're not going to cover me. They're not going to be able to get. I'm going to dunk on them. Wait till I play against them. And then you start dribbling the bit and the guy knocks it out of your hand. Yeah, you're lucky on that one. And you start playing. Now you're facing the guy and it's a lot different. You know, David might have looked and said, he's a lot bigger than I thought. I know he's big up in the mountain. I thought it was the hill. Man, he's bigger than I thought. Look at his spear. His spear is bigger than me. I tell you what, he probably thought, he's just coming. I better be a good shot. I only got one shot against this guy. I don't know what he was thinking. But I tell you what, I don't think he thought like that. Not David. In fact, look in verse 45, what he says. After he said, come on, after trash talking, come on, I'm going to feed you to the birds. He said, then David said to Philistine, you come with me with a sword, with a spear, and with a shield. I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defiled. He's coming towards him, and he's big as he is, and he's trash talking. I'm going to feed you. He said, I'm not afraid of you. The Lord's with me. How could you say that? Because he knew the Lord by his experience. If he delivered me from the lion and the bear, he'll deliver me from you. And that's what we say today. You know, when we talk to somebody, we call them and we say, hey, hope you feel better. I tell you what, the Lord's going to take care of you. He is. He is. He's going to take you to heaven if you'll just stay faithful. You know, you might not get better from your sickness. And you might have tears for a long time. And your mate may not come back. And you might not find another mate. But you know what? It's still going to be okay. Because you can go to heaven. And David, even if David, hey, David had to fight him. If David hadn't have fought him, he better repent that he didn't stand up. He had to fight him. And if David got put through with a sword, David would be remembered by those on earth as somebody that stood up for the Lord's cause, even at the point of death. That's what you have in Stephen. How about Stephen? He was stoned to death. He didn't miraculously, all of a sudden, the stones didn't hit Stephen and knock off him, did he? Stephen had a good heart. Stephen loved the Lord. He followed the Lord. But sometimes our prayers aren't always answered the way we think. And that's why a lot of times older members will always say, I'll see you next Lord's Day if it's what? That's right. You never hear young guys, hey, see you next week. I'll see you in a month. I'm going to the beach. I'll be back. Not old people. Not the old brothers. They'll say, even if it's tomorrow night, they'll say for me, I'll say, I'll see you tomorrow night if the earth's still here. What do they know? I don't know. Atom bomb coming or something? No. If I'm still alive, are you not feeling good? Well, I am now, but I might get sick tonight. Man, I don't know about that. But that's the way David was. I'm coming to you. And I tell you what, I know the Lord's going to help. Today, we need to tell the Lord our problems and our trials and our temptations. And remember, our God is bigger than whatever problem we face. And in verse 46, this day the Lord will deliver thee into thy hand. I'll smite him and take the head from thee, and I'll give the carcass of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know there is a God. Just thinking, he says, hey, I'm going to cut your head off. Yeah, sure you are. You know, he didn't think he would. And God gives the faithful strength. And David hit him in the right place. And you know, notice, the rock didn't kill him, I don't believe. I think it stunned him. I think it knocked him out. In verse 51, what happens? Therefore, David ran and stood upon the Philistine, took his sword and drew it out of the sheaf thereof, and he slew him. That's when he killed him. He knocked him down, stunned him, and he cut off his head. So that tells me a little bit about David. I know the adrenaline was flowing. He cut his head off. I'm sure, and if he used his sword, he probably had both hands, and I don't know if he sawed it or what, but he cut it off. And when the Philistines saw this, their champion was dead. They fled. See, they relied on one man for help. David relied on one God to help. How in the world did the world's greatest underdog defeat Goliath? How in the world did he do it? Well, you know, his strength came from his trusting in God. But not only did he have to trust, he had to obey. You have to have faith in works. David had to fight against the lion and bear. God didn't do it all. He had to fight. David had to fight Goliath. He ran to the battle. God was right there, but he still had to fight. And today it's no different. The Lord's with us. But if you're sick, you're going to have to take care of yourself. You have to take your medicine and do what the doctor says. And if your marriage isn't going well, the Lord's there, but you're going to have to be a better husband. You're going to have to be a better wife. And if your children aren't doing like they should, you're going to have to be a better parent. And if you're a child and your parents aren't doing good, you're going to have to be a better child and try to help. You're going to have to do some things. And the Lord's with you, but you're going to have to turn off your TV. You're going to have to turn off your computer. You're going to have to maybe switch a job and new move. You're going to have to do some things. But God expects you to put your works with your faith. It's no different. It's no different. Now get out there and, of course, show your belief. And that's what David did. David was in the valley. This story takes place in a valley. Our life is going to have a lot of valleys. How do you get out of the valley? Only one way out of the valley. And that's you got to hold God's hand. When you hold God's hand, he'll take you out of the valley. Sometimes our doings, and we're in the valley because of our own sin. But the Lord will pick you out of that valley. Sometimes we're in the valley because people didn't treat us right. People sinned, and that affect our life, and now we're down in the valley. But God sees it, and he'll help us out. When you're in the valley of life and you're the underdog, you better do what David said. You did. You better trust God. He'll strengthen you and you'll be victorious. It may not be a victory that's fulfilled finally here on earth, but it will be at the end. Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Yes, but my mate didn't come back. I know. Yes, but you know, I lost my child. I know. Yeah, but I died such a young death, Lord. I know. But you have a victory now. You have a home in heaven. No matter your place in life, whether you're a teenager, young, married, divorced, widow, widower, single parent, senior citizen, you have to fight battles, all kinds of battles, knowing that God is with us. He's the ultimate one. He's the ultimate one. And no matter whatever battle you're in, always remember the battle belongs to the 749. Let's sing 749. 749. I'm going to lead this song, All Things Are Possible. 749. Y'all sing loud after I get it going. There's song leaders and song starters. I'm a song starter. Brother Fox, you better pick up for me, buddy. In heavenly arms. Thank you.